is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown. Brian Burns to the house.
This one is picked again. Intercepted by Boston.
Bridgewater, throw into the end zone. Touchdown.
Samuel, still on his feet, inside the five, to the end zone, touchdown. What a play.
And it is caught for the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. One, two, three.
Keep pounding.
All right, Panthers fans, welcome back. It's another edition of the Roar Podcast with John Ellis and Billy Marshall right here on Blue Wire. Hope y'all are having a good week so far on this as we come to you on a Monday night. And we have a ton to talk about, of course. Panthers have added a few players since Billy and I last talked, and we're going to break that down as well as all the buzz going on about these quarterbacks and more players to be looked at in the NFL draft, which is a month from today. Billy, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, my man. Doing well. We've, like I said, got a lot to talk about here. Just, guess we can open up with what's been a pretty interesting free agent class so far for Carolina. You and I haven't spoken since they have put together a few new pieces on defense. So I guess we can start there. I'd like to get your thoughts on what they've done so far. Hassan Reddick is in the fold now. You've got Morgan Fox. Of course, they've added several players, Denzel Perriman, inside linebacker, run stuffer, who has played limited snaps but still impresses me at times, Frankie LeVou. What are your thoughts so far defensively on what Scott Fitterer has done?
Yeah, just overall, they seem to take a more kind of cautious approach. They weren't really diving in the market like a team such as the Patriots and all their offseason spending. Yeah. So, I thought it was a pretty conservative yet responsible approach, especially defensively. Offensively, we'll get to in a second here. But I thought the signings, I mean, for what they are, they're fine signings or upgrades too, depending on how big of an upgrade they are. I don't think they're – I mean, the jump from Whitehead to – Perriman is, pretty decent size upgrade, but I don't think Perriman is still probably a league average linebacker. But again, you're not really paying him, the type of money where you expect him to play at an elite level. And then they got fortunate with the Hassan Reddick connection. And I think, free agency, it's always so fascinating to me because for a couple of reasons. One is some of the hindsight analysis that's done within free agency could be a little tiring. But because I feel like free agency is a lot of the time it's about relationships. Signing a big money deal to a player, you're going to have that every once in a while. But at the same time, when you have a situation like Hassan Reddick, where maybe he's not seeing the market he does, but because he has a relationship with the coaching staff, it benefits you in that regard. And I think that eventually money does speak, but just look at the Trent Williams situation. I mean, he had an opportunity to get similar money to go play for the Chiefs, which is the best organization, playing for the best quarterback, most likely going to be the best quarterback for the next decade or so, but he's opted to stay with the 49ers because of the relationship he's built. So for me, it's always interesting to hear some of the analysis and some of the grading that's done in free agency. It's a little different than the draft where you have a lot more information available and it's more of a, you have a team control over that. With free agency, again, it's like it said, it's a free agent and the player has a lot of control. So I never want to be too harsh on a organization unless you're dishing out a crazy amount of money to Matt Khalil, which is obviously stupid at the time. I thought defensively, they did pretty well. And I think they supplemented their roster fine. And they still have some areas to go. And it helps you prepare for the draft when you go into it to really attack best player available.
It really does. Trent Williams, maybe he just wants to protect Mac Jones at this point, Bill. Who knows? We'll get to that. No, I thought they filled some needs there. I mean, Morgan Fox is an underrated interior lineman who's pretty versatile.
I did mention him, didn't I?
You did mention him, Billy. I wanted to bring that up in one of our past pods. He was one of the guys you had, you know, on your radar. And I was tickled to see that the Carolina swooped in and got him. And, you know, again, like a situation with Denzel Perryman. You know, his run grades on PFF match up with the tape. He's outstanding. Is he a coverage guy? You know, okay, probably not as bad as Tahir Whitehead, but he's probably not going to be asked to do a lot of that in this defense. And, you know, again, Pat Meyer was on the same staff as Perryman, to your point. So, you know, there's connections you build. Obviously, Hassan Reddick, going way back with Matt Rhule, sort of the same kind of connection that Robbie Anderson had in a way. That was, I think, not a hometown discount, but maybe just one of those deals where, you know, Carolina got a player that's on the rise. That 6'1", 235 is obviously very much a hybrid rusher, but he fits what Phil Snow does. And I think Brian Burns, it'll be a great combination.
I don't think Reddick would accept that deal if it was like, I don't know, like the Bengals or the Lions or some random team. I'm not just throwing those two teams out there. I think because of you know, the connection that Matt is able to have and being able to pair with Burns, it probably appealed to him. And it's only a one-year deal too.
Yep, that's true. And this has been the year of the one-year deal, Billy. I'm sure that has to do with the cap. There have been so many one-year deals around the league. What's the kid's name from Seattle? The defensive tackle who just signed with the Chiefs. He signed a one-year
deal. Jaron Reed?
Jaron Reed, yeah. And he's a guy, you know, obviously, that Carolina was probably at least taking a peek at because of Scott Fitterer. But, again, I think they're pretty well set, at least on the front end of their defensive tackle rotation now. They're going to add some depth with the very versatile F.A. Obata leaving. He played inside, played outside, but that's what the draft is for. And, you know, maybe later in the free agency rotation here, you can add some guys. You know, I think it was interesting what they did. Rashawn Melvin, what are your thoughts on him? Is he going to be a starter? I mean, he's a journeyman. He's bounced around, Billy. I don't know what I think about Rashawn. Is he just depth or is he the guy that's going to put opposite Dante?
Yeah, I'm guessing they just need competition at cornerback and he provides it. And I guess if he reaches a level, you know, he had in the past, then maybe he finds a roster spot. But I don't think that he's someone that they should be fully relying on. I am a little surprised that they haven't done a lot more at cornerback. Maybe that's a position they're really going to attack in the draft.
You would think, yeah. And there's certainly
Rasul Douglas, they didn't re-sign him. Nope. They didn't re-sign Corn Elder.
Nope. So you got basically you sit with Melvin, Troy Pride, Hartsfield, Thomas Oliver, and Dante at this point. And I've even heard rumors that Melvin could be shifted to safety. You never know. I mean, it we'll just have to see. It's a lot to figure out here. I wonder what they'll do at free safety there with Chin presumably moving back to strong. Do you think that's a Justin Burris spot now? What are you thinking in terms of the deep middle safety there? How does Carolina attack that?
Yeah, I do think they're going to look at this in the draft. And you and I had a conversation this week, and I do know that Matt Rhule is a big fan of Trevon Mooring, the TCU safety. He has also made it very known during the Senior Bowl how much of a fan he was of Richie Grant, the UCF safety. So I think this is a position that they're going to really figure out a way to attack in the draft. Not just safety, but also a cornerback as well. I mean, we'll get to how they should attack the draft later, but I just want to throw that out there. But I think that just looking at the options on the roster right now, I think that Burris would be an option to take that spot. I don't think Chin is a natural, like, deep safety. I think his best role is everywhere. The versatility that he brings inside the box and outside the box, you don't want to pigeonhole him into one spot. And that usually, I think that for the development of young players, you kind of want to pigeonhole them so they can kind of just make sure that they're learning and studying, like, you're kind of making sure that what they are understanding is just one position. So you're not giving them too much information. But I feel like for Chin and for what we saw last season, the versatility and the ability to line up in different areas is a really premium skill set that he has and not a lot of other players have.
Yeah. It's a defense that continues to get stronger, and it's good to see, especially in the front seven. So I'll see how they continue to build around that. Offensively, they added a few interesting names, Billy. Cam Irving, former first-round pick, offensive tackle, who has had his ups and downs, of course. Pat Elflein, who I believe was second-team All-Pro as a rookie, but has sort of faded in years past, at least from a PFF standpoint. And I guess on tape, some people have seen sort of lack of consistency in the pass blocking game there. And then Dan Arnold, who's a very fascinating player, 6'6", 220. Hard to know what he is other than maybe just a U tight end who is going to be a move guy. You work around the offense sort of like a Jimmy Graham type of player. What do you make of some of these moves that they've made along the offensive line and with Arnold? What's your impression of this kid?
Yeah, they also signed David Moore.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, and they brought back John Miller, which I was happy to see.
Yes.
So let's start with the first two moves, because they made these moves like immediately when free agency started or tampering started, whatever. At the time, I wasn't a fan of them. I'm still not a fan of it. I understand it. I'm just looking at how much other guards have been paid. And looking at how the market kind of materialized, it makes sense that the market for those two players was that much. I just feel like they aren't very good, so I would have rather them go in a different direction. Because to me, when I look at a guy like John Miller, who, in my opinion, is a very solid NFL guard, I don't think Miller is going to ever be an all-pro, or he's not going to wow you. He's not going to show up on the highlight reels of pancaking guys, but he does his job. And I think that's very important in the NFL. And for him to only get like a $1.1 million deal, I feel like that's good value. These other two guys, I feel like they are resting on their draft status, being former first round picks and getting these type of deals. I mean, Elflein was cut by the Vikings last year and the Jets played him for like 4 or 5 games. And he was okay with them. I mean, he had a couple of moments where he looked fine on tape. I know he pancaked a couple guys here and there, but just looking at talking about the consistency, it's been an issue for him throughout his career. And the same thing with Irving. He was injured last year, so I'm not really sure what they saw in him. So I wasn't a fan of those two players, but they are cheap. They do fill out some sort of rotation on the offensive line, and I don't think it's going to preclude them from, you know, young players potentially taking over their spot. If it was a guy like, if you paid like a Joe Tooney or Corey Linsley, then those guys are going to be, you know, your fixture on the offensive line. But I think that these deals are essentially 1 or 2 year deals. It's not going to hamstring you in the future like the Matt Khalil deal did. So I think it's whatever. I'm not going to cry about it too much. I mean, when it first happened, I was a little annoyed at it. But as the market kind of developed and I saw other deals, I was like, all right, fine, I get why they did it, even though I'm not a fan of either player in particular. Dan Arnold, I am a fan of. I actually like him quite a bit. I've been a fan of his for a few seasons, especially when he was on the Saints. So he flashed quite a bit in preseason play. Mm-hmm. And then when he was playing tight end for Kyler Murray during his rookie year, and even last year, he looks like a very natural tight end, very good fluidity. He understands how to run routes. He understands how to make cuts at the top of routes to really create separation. He has long arms, so he's able to go up and get the ball too. He's pretty athletic. I'm a fan of his. Now, the Panthers did lose Manhurts, so I'm not sure. I don't think Dan Arnold is that type of tight end. He's not a blocking tight end by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
So I'm curious to see how they do replace Manhurts, because I think that's a position that they use quite a bit, even though me and you didn't really like the utilization of him too much because you felt like you should use your pass catchers more, not a blocking tight end.
Right.
But I'm curious to see how they, replace that position. I mean, they also
I was gonna say, not to mention Alex Arma has walked as well, and that's a big development, because you're likely, I don't know if they're gonna replace the fullback position, and that to me says that maybe Joe Brady is looking to schematically shift back to more of the LSU model of getting away from some of the 21 personnel stuff they were running last year, 22 personnel, and even some of the 12 personnel, and get back to more of a four wide concept with that move tight end around. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I didn't even think of that. I did remember. I do remember reading the news that Arma left, but yeah, Arma and Mannhertz leaving. It kind of does leave you in a little bit of a situation. I mean, I do think those positions, I don't think they are premium areas that you need to invest in. Like, you don't need to use like a third or fourth round pick on those players. You can probably find them at the back end of the draft or an undrafted free agency. But yeah, it's something that I'm going to be monitoring, because Arma was like sixth or seventh round draft pick too. So, I mean, he was drafted, and then I think backup running back is another area. I think they were reportedly in the Chris Carson sweepstakes, and they let Mike Davis walk to the Falcons. I mean, you have a running back who, I know we're seeing pictures of him training and all that stuff, but I mean, he missed what, 14 games, 13 games last year. So
yeah, that's scary.
That's
scary.
Yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done on this roster, and I don't know. Do you know why they released Zach Kerr? That one, I'm kind of scratching my head.
I don't know, because I think you and I both liked Zach a lot. He came in and provided them some good, you know, versatility. He could play the nose. He played a little three. He was able to get some penetration. I thought he's a very steady guy inside it, and the price was not bad either. You're going to get him on the cheap. I just thought it was a good value guy. I know they got Morgan Fox in the mix, who's listed as a D end on some charts here, but you know, he's played a lot of tackle, but he's a much different player than Kerr. He was a very beneficial piece for Derek Brown as well. I didn't like that move. I thought they should have kept Kerr.
Yeah. I'm not going to, again, it's not such a situation where I'm going to complain about it. A lot of their moves have been fine. It's free agency. They didn't do anything egregious. But yeah, the three moves where I probably have question marks and I don't really agree with them were the two offensive linemen and then releasing Zach Kerr. Everything else, it was pretty fine. I was a big fan of signing Fox and Arnold, and obviously Reddick was a good signing too.
I'm excited about Reddick. I really am, because I think, you know, some people say it was a flash in the pan season. I don't know, man. He's always getting to the quarterback, and he's getting the damn ball out too. That's what I love. I mean,
even if it was a flash in the pan, you got him for $8 million on a 1-year deal.
Right. You're not paying 4 years at $80 million. You're getting a relatively good deal for a guy who produced, he had 5 sacks against the Giants, but he also had 7.5 other sacks throughout the year. So, again, he's very much a hybrid player, and you know what Phil Snow likes to do. He likes to mix it up. So,
and he's going to be motivated because he's on a 1-year deal.
1-year deal, exactly. You're going to get a very motivated player. So I think you're right. Now, I mean, let's shift to what everybody's talking about right now, obviously, is the 49ers have obviously traded up to number 3. There's a lot of, as we call it, it's lying season. It's silly season. You're going to hear a lot of rumors, a lot of bullshit that really doesn't come to fruition, and we understand that. Billy, you've been around this a long time, so you get it as well as anybody. And then, of course, Deshaun Watson situation. I was asked on ESPN Upstate here a couple of hours ago, would you take Deshaun Watson now if they lowered the price? And I said, absolutely not. They got to figure some of this stuff out legally. I wouldn't touch that anywhere right now. Just your thoughts, I guess we'll start with the overall draft spectrum right now in the top 10 with how this affects Carolina. San Francisco trading up, reportedly very heavy on Mac Jones. That very well could be a smokescreen, as you know. What are your thoughts on what's happened here since we last spoke in terms of the top 10?
Yeah, I'm not really sure how to take all of it in. I'm still trying to figure out. I was watching Kyle Shanahan's press conference earlier today, and I really couldn't get a read on it, because he says that they're going to 2 more pro days. I think he said he's going to Mac Jones's pro day tomorrow, but then they're also setting up another pro day for Fields and Trey Lance. And I heard Schefter on the radio, or not on the radio, but after the trade was made, that the 49ers could potentially trade up with the Jets to number 2. So all of it is conjecture. I don't think that they're trading up to number 2. I think they know who the options are at number 3. But as it relates to Carolina, I think it's interesting because you and I, we laid out the possibility of Teddy returning in January, I think.
Yep.
Because we saw the roster, we understood the areas of concern, and we realized that this is not a roster that's ready to compete. Now, certainly when you have veteran quarterback options available, that allows you to kind of pivot your stance. I think that's what they tried to do with Stafford, and the Rams just put in a very big offer, and that kind of led Matt Stafford to go to Los Angeles. So for Carolina, I think it's a couple of things, because I've read about it from people that we trust. Joe has written about it. Bill has also tweeted about it. The Panthers, they see two guys as franchise quarterbacks in this draft, and those are the top two guys who are going one and two by all indications. And then it seems like someone else mentioned this, is that Tepper like would have rather sold the entire farm for one of the veteran options like a Stafford or Watson. And now because of the situation with Watson, which I don't think is something you and I can speculate on because it's not our job to do it. Nope. I'll just let everyone go read the reporting and read any type of legal stuff that come out. I'm not going to get into it. It's up to you guys to decide.
Smart move. That's how you should approach this, honestly.
Yeah. So with that being said, it just feels like to me that I'm seeing Carolina, they are going to these quarterback pro days. They are doing their due diligence, but I'm also seeing them go all over the country. I mean, like I said, Matt Rhule was at TCU's pro day. He was at South Carolina's pro day. He's going to, I'm sure he'll probably be at Ohio State's pro day tomorrow, as Scott Fitter was at USC. So they are going across the country to scout talent. Right. And I don't think they're pigeonholing themselves to a young quarterback in the top 10. They might just have to go back with Bridgewater. I don't think that's the end of the world. I know some fans are going to hate it. And trust me, you and I, we have our criticisms of Teddy, but this roster, I'm just still looking at it. Like, as much as they did in free agency, it still has a lot of areas. Like we said, defensive backfield, interior defensive line.
Yeah.
You know, wide receiver still.
Left tackle.
Exactly. Left tackle. I mean, they were at the offensive line coaches were at Darrisaw's pro day.
Yeah.
I think there is a lot of areas that this team is that they need to address. And I don't think that if you're not going to get one of the top two quarterbacks, it just makes sense to trade down from eight or just stick at eight and potentially take if Kyle Pitts drops to you. Take the best player available in that situation.
Yeah, until we got around to like after Thanksgiving last year, Billy, there was really nobody talking realistically about Bridgewater being on the outs this year. And honestly, it was because of the way the contract was designed. We can't say that enough. It's a $22 million cap hit this year. He's 12% of the cap allocation for Carolina right now. Now, you can't hiss and moan about that deal over and over. I've done it, but, you know, what are you going to do? It's done. He's not going to restructure, obviously. So they're in a situation where financially they're not going to cut him. That would be irresponsible because then you're left with a $20 million cap hit. And he's not the worst thing in the world in terms of guiding you forward. If he gets right, like Matt Rhule talked about, he needs to be stronger. He needs to get stronger and be a more consistent player physically, but also mentally, where he's supposed to be at his best. Finish games out and do things right. Don't get sloppy. Don't force it. Maybe McCaffrey helps with that. Maybe if you draft Darrisaw or one of these premier left tackles, that helps. But no, he's certainly not the answer long term. But the plan all along, Billy, was to give Bridgewater 2 years. So we're right back where we started in a way. Now things could change. The Jets could come by and say, hey, you know what? Let's work a deal, and they could sell several draft picks away to the Jets to go snag Wilson, who I like Wilson a lot. I just, I don't know if anything's a sure bet right now other than Trevor Lawrence. That's just my view. I actually kind of like Fields a little better than Wilson, if you ask me, but to each their own on this.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But I think that Carolina, their position is probably that they have the top two being Lawrence and Wilson,
right?
Based on what I've saw from Bill.
Yeah.
I think it was on Friday after the trade went down, and him and I kind of tweeting back and forth on that. And I mean, he was pretty respectful about it. He kind of welcomed all viewpoints. And I think that's the right mindset for this team and just for this fan base, is to be prepared for the possibility of, I'm sure they're going to draft a quarterback like in the, maybe the fourth or fifth round to, you know, be on the depth chart potentially. It's not going to be a situation like Will Greer where they're going to hype him up to be something he's not.
Right.
But just to provide competition in some ways. So I think that Carolina needs to just keep their options open, because this roster, I'm really just not seeing the areas where this team can get better if they're not going to get one of the top two quarterbacks. So yeah. I think the most prudent way to continue to build this team is through the draft. I mean, we just saw what you did in free agency. You smartly did not do what the Patriots did, and everyone's talking about how well the Patriots did, and that's fine. I'm personally not a fan of just dishing out a ton of money like that to, you know, all these players. I think that you need to be a little smart and prudent the way you go about free agency, because again, it's about familiarity. You want to bring players in who not only fit your scheme, but your culture too. I know that's a dumb buzzword, but I do think it matters.
It does.
So yeah, I think that we'll continue to talk about this, but let's just say hypothetically they traded down with like the Patriots, like in that 14 to 16 range.
I was just about to mention the Pats at 15. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just the hypothetical, like they trade down like 7-8 spots. You pick up, you know, maybe you pick up an additional second rounder, an additional like third rounder in 2022, and you also get like 2 fourth rounders. I think that's a pretty good haul. And I mean, just looking at that, then you drop down to 14 or 15, you're potentially getting, you know, one of the left tackles drops. I don't think it's going to be Slater or Sewell, but maybe Darrisaw is there. And I know some people are.
If you could get Darrisaw at 15, that would be a steal, I think.
Yeah, there's some people out there who have him, Darrisaw, a little lower than us. I think he's
Paul,
good.
Our good friend Paul Alexander was just on Moving the Chains earlier, and he gave a rave review about Darrisaw. I mean, he was just absolutely.
You and I watch the ACC a lot. I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you. I saw him.
His first game. He gave up 6 pressures last year and no sacks. I mean, that's damn good production in the ACC.
I mean, his first game ever was in primetime against FSU, and his first opponent, Brian Burns.
Yep, that's right.
I remember that game because I think it was like 2018. So, yep. And he was fine. He was a true freshman. He gave up pressures to Burns like pretty much any left tackle did that season. But no, I like Darrisaw. And I mean, if they want to go safety or corner, I don't think Surtain is going to be there. I don't think Horn might be there. If J.C. Horn is there at 15, I'm sprinting down Mint Street.
Oh, I love J.C. Horn.
Giving them
He's got that Jalen Ramsey swagger about him, too. He's built that way. He's got a fierce streak to him. I mean, we've seen him play right down the road here in Columbia, and he's a great corner. I think he's got really good potential there.
Yeah, and I saw Trevor Lawrence was tweeting about how legit he is, too. Yeah, so
yes.
If you need any more indication about how good this guy is, I'm sure plenty of our listeners are South Carolina fans. So,
sure.
if he's – that's the thing, John. Like, there's going to be premier talent available if they don't go – let's just say 4 QBs – or even let's just say 5 QBs go. Like, and
– almost unprecedented, by the way, but let's just say it happens.
I'll say 4 just to play a conservative.
It could happen. I'm saying it very well could this year, but, I mean, it's almost never happened that way.
Miami, Cincinnati, let's say they take Ja'Marr Chase. Supposedly Joe Burrow is lobbying very heavily for them to get him back. And then let's say Miami takes Waddle or Smith.
Right.
And then 7 is – who's picking 7?
Detroit. They said, yeah, Detroit sitting there in front of Carolina at 7.
Yeah, I don't know where Detroit – they might go the left – well, they have a left tackle. I don't know where they would go.
Look, Denver could leapfrog Carolina to 7, too. There's another factor. They're at 9. And if there's a quarterback sitting on the board, then I Denver has made it very clear they're interested in quarterbacks, even though they have Drew Locke and there's a jury still out on his game. But I think Denver could leapfrog Carolina here.
Yeah, and let's just hypothetically say, like, Kyle Pitts falls to their lap. Like, really going to tell me they're going to pass on that? Like, Kyle Pitts is like, he's like the second best. Like, you look at all these, like, big boards, like Dane Brugler and Daniel Jeremiah, they all have Kyle Pitts number two on their big board. Like, yeah. This is a very good player.
Well, NFL, Zuerlein's latest mock has him falling to 11 to the Giants. I just don't see that happening. I think if
Carolina is not going to take a QB, I think – you have to replace Curtis Samuel. As much as I do like the David Moore acquisition, I think Moore is a complimentary wide receiver four, wide receiver three, maybe on his good days. You have to find another game changer on offense to really help out just the entire team, and Kyle Pitts would be that guy. And from what I heard, the previous general manager had a very high opinion of Kyle Pitts, and the scouts who were employed by that previous general manager are still in the building. So I don't know how the coaching staff feels, but it just makes sense that a guy who has the talent that Pitts does can just, I mean, Kyle Pitts made Kyle Trask look competent. Let's be honest.
Yes, I agree. Yes, totally. And I've heard Trask's name come up as a second or third rounder for Carolina. I just don't think that's something I would have any interest in, honestly.
Yeah. You know, a couple tools that are cool to use are those mock draft simulators. You can really kind of lay out different scenarios, which direction this team could go in. But they could shock everyone. Not really shock, but they could still go with a QB. I'm not denying that they could still trade up to number. I don't think they're going to trade up to number four. I don't think Atlanta's going to trade up with them, even though I don't think Atlanta should hang up the phone. Everyone's saying that Atlanta can't give Carolina a franchise QB. Well, what if Atlanta gives Carolina the next quarterback that's a huge bust?
Right.
I mean, they benefit from that too.
And of course, the price tag would be huge for moving up. Atlanta as a division rival would leverage that, and they would get a nice haul out of that, even though they're only moving up four spots. Just to add something, I talked to an insider who was at Zach Wilson's pro day, somebody we speak to a lot as a source here, and he said it's the best arm he's ever seen up close evaluating. And we saw, obviously the pro day and some of the throws he made, but just every throw he made was just knocked this guy off his feet. The frame is something that a lot of people I continue to hear about are concerned about. I saw Matt Bowen's write up, a very thorough scouting report on Wilson. And that's a consistent theme I hear with not only Wilson, but Trevor Lawrence in terms of upper body strength and having to maintain a good frame and build up, bulk up a little bit for this game. I look at Fields. One thing about Justin Fields is I heard Pat Kerwin mention this earlier, and I thought it was a pretty good point. He's got some of the Russell Wilson running traits in that he runs smart. He doesn't take hits. He's obviously can make every deep throw you can imagine. That's something else I can tell you our sources very high on is some of the tape that he put up against Clemson. I know there were a lot of guys wide open there, but just some of the throws he made and the hits he took coming back. I like Fields. I like Lance too, Billy, just for the pro style offense, his cerebral play. I think he's ready to come in and play that style of offense. I just don't, with the San Francisco thing, and we've talked about Mac Jones. I don't hate Mac Jones. I think he's a fine quarterback. I just don't know if he's a good fit for Shanahan's wide zone, boot system. He just hasn't shown enough in terms of out of the pocket. And I certainly don't think Carolina would be, wise to take him at eight. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with this Mac Jones stuff.
Chris Sims is going on. That's what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, even Shanahan during his presser was kind of throwing cold water at the idea that Chris Sims is his spokesperson or something. He was just like,
I saw that.
Chris that much.
He's like, we hadn't talked in a couple of years. And I saw Stephen Ruiz posted something where they talked last year, but still, I mean, I don't think Sims is on the phone with Kyle. Obviously, I mentioned this on one of my little periscopes that Kyle and Chris go back. Obviously, they have a relationship and they talk a lot. But something to bring up, too, that, Kyle's dad, Mike, back during the Cutler you know, days, was apparently nowhere near Cutler's pro days at all. Nowhere. I mean, he was totally ignored him and ended up, you know, drafting. So you don't know. I mean, just some of these things are so much of a smokescreen, and, you know, there's a certain way to evaluate guys. You know, Carolina wasn't very involved in Mac Jones's first pro day, obviously, but they coached him at the Senior Bowl, so they got a firsthand look at his preparation, his mindset. So you can't read too much into this stuff, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm guessing they'll probably be in Columbus for Justin Fields' pro day tomorrow.
Yeah.
For that same reason, because they've already had a close-hand look at Mac Jones, so they don't really need to go back to Tuscaloosa to get another look at him.
Yeah, well, it's going to be fascinating, Billy. I'm glad we caught up on this stuff because there's so much to talk about. Obviously, the Watson thing, we'll keep an eye on it, but as you said very wisely, and this is sort of the approach I've taken, just sharing a few articles here and there is fine, but I have no expertise here, and I know nothing about this situation to even touch it, so let's just let that play out and just assume for now that Carolina, like every other team in the league, is probably just pumping the brakes on that for a few months. Give me a couple names. I know you've been doing a lot of evaluation yourself. You've been watching these pro days. Are there a couple names that come to mind, maybe second, third round guys that you could give us an edge on that maybe Carolina might not have an interest in, but you would if you were in Scott Fitterer's shoes?
Yeah. You know, I don't think – well, the running backs coach was in Chapel Hill today, which tells you that they're still looking to – out of that position.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you feel about that. I like both Williams and Carter kind of equally.
Yeah.
So I'll be fine with either player, but let's just say that offensive line, they're going to roll with the talent they have now, and then maybe they'll draft a guy like in the day three or something. Mm-hmm. Let's try to focus our search on maybe interior defensive line and defensive backfield.
Right.
So I'm looking at, you know, the guys that they could draft in the second, third round on the defensive backfield. So I really like the UCF guy and the Georgia guys too. So Tay Gowan, he did not play last year. He was an opt-out.
Right.
But he has the length and he's really fast. I mean, he's 6'2", a little light, 185 pounds, but he has been timed into 4.3s. And I think their pro day, if I'm not mistaken, is tomorrow. Regardless. And then Aaron Robinson, another player who was at the Senior Bowl, and I believe, yes, he was coached by Matt Rhule and the Panthers coaching staff. He was very physical at the line of scrimmage. I'm a huge fan of just his tenacity and his physicality and just the way he gets in receivers' faces. So if they're going to continue to add in defensive at that cornerback position, I like Robinson and Gowan. Now, I also said the Georgia guys, Stokes and Campbell, those are two guys that I think that they should have their eye on as well. Both of them tested relatively well. Now, one guy I am interested in seeing how his stock kind of – like where his stock will be like in a couple weeks. And it's tough for us to know on the outside, but I think I have a general sense that the Virginia Tech corner, Caleb Farley, is a guy that's probably going to drop into the second round because of the injuries.
Yeah.
I just feel it. Like I've seen the same thing. We saw it with Jalen Smith. We saw it with Miles mm-hmm. Jack. We've seen it with like – Jawan Taylor. We've seen these type of prospects who are hyped.
It's a back issue, right? So, I mean, that's scary for a corner. I mean, he's a long 6'2", 207, and back issues, man, especially from a corner position, are very concerning. So I could see that totally being the case where he drops.
Yeah, and I think next week is the actual combine where I think the players are going in for medicals.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the actual combine, but
right.
So safety, I really like Jamar Johnson from Indiana. He had two really impressive interceptions off Justin Fields in their game against Ohio State. I posted a clip of him too, but mm-hmm. he has the deep range to really just command the back end of a defense. And I think he's an option, maybe not in the second, but in the third round. I think that, you know, Carolina should definitely keep their eyes open on him. Elijah Molden, he has been really good this year. I'm a huge fan of just the way he plays. He plays his slot, and then he gets deep. He has really good coverage skills. And I've already mentioned that Richie Grant, that they should have a pretty good idea of him because they coached him at the Senior Bowl. So
they coached him at the Senior Bowl. Richie's a very versatile guy, and he's probably around 2-3 type of guy. So I wouldn't be shocked there either. I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know, like, I guess, like, what other positions do you think? Like, Zaven Collins is a linebacker from Tulsa. Like, I don't really see that type of player coming in for them, but maybe, like, an off-ball linebacker.
Yeah.
That's a potential. And then I don't want to rule out interior defensive line. A guy right down the road in Raleigh, North Carolina, Aleem McNeil from NC State, and he's played – he's had a really good season. There were quite a few players that they coached this Senior Bowl – that they could take a look at. So I think one of the beneficial things about this scouting season for Carolina has been that, one, they're attending all these pro days, so they're getting a close-up look at these players and how they are testing and how they're moving. Because I think it matters, like, maybe not necessarily the athletic scores, but right. When your coaches are running the drills, you get an idea of how these players – what their movement skills are like. And I think that is important when you are scouting. It's not the end all be all. Of course, the tape should trump everything and then the analytics. But I think kind of getting an idea of how players move and judging their fluidity and their instincts and stuff like that, just their start-stop ability, I really do think that the coaches, and they have been attending quite a few pro days, just searching Twitter and going through it. So that's a good thing. And then the fact that they were coaching the Senior Bowl, I think, also gives them a heads up. So I think they have a lot of options. And I really think that if they attack this draft, right, they have a really good opportunity to add some really good talent in the years to come.
Oh, there's, you know, and the year to your point, there's some really good names in those second and third round projected wise. I mean, I'm a little bit biased here, but I think most folks agree that Amari Rodgers is a very good player in the slot. And can give you a lot of value in terms of not only the way he plays the game offensively, but his special teams value as well. And if Carolina is looking to maybe go back to some of the, you know, 10, 11 personnel stuff that Joe Brady has been building his name on through LSU, that might be a good guy to add to the mix. And then you got some offensive linemen there. Quinn Menerts, you know, we've talked about him. Obviously, you've got the kid from – God, his name's escaping me right now. He's the offensive lineman we have talked about quite a bit. Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma. Yeah. I mean, you've got some names there. You know, it's as well as, you know, Richie Grant, who you mentioned, who I think is very much on their radar, not only because Carolina has had firsthand experience working with him, but we've talked about Matt Rule's opinion of him being very high, and they need a safety in that back end. So it'll be fascinating to watch, man, no doubt.
Yeah, and I'm not ruling out a wide receiver in the second round either.
Not at all, no.
Especially, I think this is – well, in general, I think this is a very deep receiver class.
Yeah.
So maybe you can get a guy like Amari Rodgers like in the third or fourth round.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be surprised if they take, like, a guy who had his pro day today, De'Ami Brown, like in the second. So, I mean, Robbie Anderson only has, like, another year in his contract, so it's not like he's a long-term fixture on this team.
Totally. That's a great point. You got to start thinking ahead with these things. DJ Moore's got a contract coming up. Obviously, they'll re-sign him, no doubt. But they got to think ahead. So we'll continue to monitor it. Billy, good talk, man. Anything else?
No, I'm really happy we did this. Spent a little bit of time, but
yeah,
it's good to do this again and kind of give you an update on where things stand.
It's heating up, man. We got a lot to get to here. It's going to be a fun month. So you and I'll be attacking it every week here, getting ready for the draft, and I'm sure we'll have a big draft preview come draft week. So we'll continue to get after it. Guys, thanks for joining us. We always enjoy it. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Spotify, wherever you hear your podcast. It's The Roar right here on Blue Wire.